Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:27, that's Pacific Summer Time, and today is August 10th. And there's a continuing debate going on in the markets as to what is the efficacy, how effective are, and whether it's even legitimate to have negative interest rates. What we're continuing to see, and it's probably worth looking at a number of those sovereign bond yields, but not necessarily from the UK or the USA, but for emerging markets, because there has been really quite marked compression. Earlier on today, I was looking at, for example, the Indonesian 10-year US dollar bond, and that has contracted from over 5% at the beginning of the year to 3% now. And we're seeing a similar move in terms of compression of yields right across the bond markets. And that is a direct response to the fact that we have so many sovereign bonds in the G7 that have negative interest rates. And UK gilts are not quite there yet, but I think the Bank of England wouldn't be overly concerned if yields went negative, because they are in the process of building out their quantitative easing program once more. And against that background, liquidity is ample. So Wall Street today was down in early trading. We've had sort of a number of headlines over the last few days talking about something in the Wall Street Journal yesterday about productivity coming down. Personally, I really have to do some more research into this to figure out how do they calculate that productivity, because if the labor force has been declining and the economy has been subject to greater automation and more jobs moving online, then I'd be rather curious to know how they're actually measuring that productivity, and whether that is a productivity figure in absolute terms or relative to the number of people employed. So there are definitely questions to be asked there. But the fact that you've had corporate profits being rather patchy again, and that on aggregate that they've declined for six straight quarters, is something that has people on edge. So there are two very important themes going on here, and monetary policy really is the big one. And the dollar today was a little bit weaker, and that takes it down to 95.6 on the dollar index, and that's pretty much testing the progression of higher reaction lows that have been in evidence for most of this year. But is that due in any particular reason to dollar strength, or is it to do more with the fact that we have negative interest rates in Europe, and that is contributing to the strength of the euro? Negative interest rates are inherently deflationary, but they help to support currencies. That has certainly been the case for the euro and indeed the yen. And the yen was a bit stronger in here today. It's again down to the 101 level. The euro is at 111.79. And certainly there's nobody in Frankfurt wants to see a strong currency. So, there are people now in Europe getting letters from their banks, which are telling them that the banks are losing money on their deposits and that they're going to have to start charging to keep money at the bank. And that is a green light to savers to either take the money out, and because the currency is appreciating because of these negative interest rates, to just park it under the bed, or to go out and spend. And well, obviously the central bank wants them to go and spend, but when you have negative interest rates and these are viewed as extraordinary measures, then there isn't much appetite for going out and spending, not least when people are so uncertain about their futures. Generally speaking, people are encouraged to spend when they have confidence about their futures, and it would appear to be something that central banks simply don't understand, is that you need to foment confidence if you want people to go out and spend money, and negative interest rates on their own are unlikely to achieve that aim. They're inherently deflationary as a result. So then who are benefiting from this? Well, certainly asset prices. And the DAX index was down very slightly in here today. In fact, most of Europe was down very slightly while the pound was up, or sorry, the FTSE 100 was up. But then we look at the potential for a rebound in European stock markets, and that has to be the base case, at least for the next few weeks. We do know where the next potential flashpoint is, and it's in the Italian referendum on whether they're going to adopt a new set of regulations for how they're going to appoint governments. And it's not looking great at the moment, and Renzi has already said that he is going to step down if the referendum isn't carried. So that's a potential flashpoint for Italy, and that could weigh on the Eurozone particularly. So it is interesting that we are right now in the region of the 200-day moving average for the stocks 50. The DAX has already broken upwards. A significant number of the larger cap shares in the Eurozone share that pattern, and they really do need to sustain moves above their respective trend means to indicate that demand is back to dominance beyond the short term. But we could say that overall, the asset prices generally tend to benefit from low interest rates and extraordinary monetary accommodation. That's certainly what we have in Europe. But it's an additional reason why people are looking at gold. And the gold price didn't quite hold the majority of its advance in here today, and it finished off the peak by about $11, but it was still up six and a bit. It was a similar story for the other precious metals, and palladium, having been as high today as 747, closed out the day up 30, but only at 724. So definitely, we're still in a medium-term bullish scenario for the precious metals, but we may be in for some additional volatility. And considering how low the VIX is, and considering what we can anticipate happening in terms both of what in political events in Europe, political events in the United States, and the potential for impeachment of Dilma Rousseff to act as a potential buy the rumor, sell the news event in Brazil, then we can make an easy prediction, and that there is going to be additional volatility. And not least because oil prices today were down over a dollar. And that is now giving us an indication that Brent and WTI are encountering resistance in the region of their respective 200-day moving averages. There was a short-term oversold condition, and now that has been unwound. And this remains a highly volatile environment for the oil price. And we really don't have a great deal of evidence just yet that more than a short-term low has been found, that those prices would really need to find support above their recent lows to give us some indication that demand is coming back in at progressively higher levels. And in the absence of that, then this is still a right-hand extension phase following the type 2 bottom. And if that's the case, then that range could be anywhere from the low, which is around $28, up to the peak, which is over 50. And that is a very large trough-to-peak swing in terms of percentage moves. And natural gas today was relatively steady, having pulled back really quite in a dynamic fashion yesterday. And considering just how firm natural gas prices have been, then this continues to look like a reversion to the mean, and we would need an upward dynamic to confirm that demand is coming back in here. When we have volatility so very low, and Wall Street still holding the majority of its gains, then the potential for some consolidation and an uptick in volatility would, I think, be the most likely scenario. And against that background, government bond prices were additionally strong in here today. And at least part of the reason for that is because there is a knock-on effect. When you have German bunds at negative interest rates, and that representing a very large pool of money. And then there are some of the rules. There is an argument that if you were to go and buy treasuries as a euro investor or as a yen investor, that you're not making any money, but you are getting a positive yield. You're just losing it on the currency variations. And that is at least in line with the investment philosophy that is written into the documents that funds are based on, because a lot of bond funds cannot buy negative yielding assets, and therefore they have to look at gilts or treasuries or Australian or Canadian bonds. Well, that is putting downward pressure on those yields as well. So the 10-year treasury yield encountered resistance around 1.6% on Monday. It's currently around 1.5%, and that 1.6 is an area of resistance. It hasn't been able to sustain a move above it for much of the last month, and then that confirms that the progression of lower rally highs is still intact. So this is an environment where we have a great deal of financial repression, that governments are creating rules so that people have to buy their bonds, and they're helping it along by buying the bonds themselves in Europe and in Japan. So that is compressing yields, and that is what governments need. They need lower borrowing costs, but that makes no allowance for how they're going to eventually pay back those debts. So there's almost certainly going to be a problem at some point in future when some of those debts begin to mature. And at that point, then there'd be big question as to what will the refinancing costs be of all that debt that's been taken out in the last 10 years. So that is potentially where the problem lies. And as a great deal of that debt starts to mature in 2018. So if we had to think about when we're going to have a big problem in the bond markets, well, then 2018 has got to be a pretty big candidate. But in the meantime, we're still in an environment where there is massive monetary accommodation, and there is the increasing likelihood of fiscal accommodation. So if we are in a period of global synchronized fiscal and monetary expansion, then that is likely to support asset prices, and that would suggest that any kind of weakness in stock markets, particularly when we see markets that have unwound overbought conditions and find support in the region of their trend means, and as long as that trend mean is rising, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, and that would be a positive entry point. Broadly speaking, when we look at the kind of asset classes that could potentially play catch-up, then the resources sector continues to stand out, and so does the biotech sector, and indeed cybersecurity. And a very interesting point, of course, is that because it is often cheaper for a corporation to endure a cyber attack rather than pay for the preventative measures, because they can rely in large part on their insurance policies, that would suggest that the insurance policies are mispriced, and it is perhaps only a matter of time before insurance companies jack up those premia, and that would force some of the larger corporations to invest much more heavily in cybersecurity, and then that could be a very powerful catalyst for the cyber market generally. So that is certainly something to keep an eye on. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and wish all the best to all of you.